Hello, everybody. Welcome to Mental Health Today, a very special episode today here. Exciting. I'm in San Francisco at the Kabuki Hotel, and we are doing live shows all day tomorrow for the Employee Mental Health Summit 2023. It's a gathering here in San Francisco area of a lot of people who really care about employee mental health, looking at ways to attack this problem, you know, from the inside out, from the employer out. And really fortunate to get really somebody pretty impressive that I've been, you know, been friends with now on LinkedIn for quite a couple of years. We were talking, Cal, and just get a chance to meet you here. Almost had you on the mental health show once. We kind of had to repost it.
Yes.
But here it is.
So good to see you.
Yeah.
Nice to see you in person, not just LinkedIn, not just through social media.
Yeah, exactly. Exciting. To see the real human person and to see where we can take our conversations. I want to learn a lot about what you do. I've spent a lot of time around employee benefits, but I'm really still quite new to mental health. But I am pretty passionate about it.
To me, that's the turning point, and now we're getting to a tipping point. Yeah. This is becoming an almost universal issue. Mental health is top of mind for most employers.
Really is universal.
And they're looking for solutions.
Cal, welcome to the show. How about a little intro? Who are you? What are you doing? And how did you end up here hosting the show for tomorrow?
Yeah, this is exciting. I met the organizer for the event from Great Green Media in London. Her name is Eleanor De La Fuente.
Hi, Eleanor.
We had an amazing initial conversation. It was so dynamic. And at the end of that call, I thought she was asking if I was going to be a sponsor. And I wasn't in a situation where I could, but she said, no, I love your passion around mental health. I'd love for you to be the chairperson. What an honor. Man. I've had the opportunity to meet most of the speakers, at least electronically and digitally, to get a chance to just understand what they're doing. It's a fabulous faculty. You're going to have dynamic conversations tomorrow.
That's what you told me right away when we first talked. We said the faculty's amazing today.
It's amazing.
Tomorrow. Is it Bernie is kicking it off? Yeah, Bernie's kicking it off. We chatted on the app, and I'm excited to meet him and hear really the story.
You can tell already with the app, this Brella app, it's going to be very collaborative.
It is.
Just these spontaneous, quick meets and greets and ample opportunity for networking.
It's a good shout out to the Brella app. I don't know how you hooked up with it, Eleanor, but it's a great app and it's really impressive. And it's really impressive. Not easy to throw those stuff off. And tomorrow's going to be wild because you have voting, networking, all kinds of stuff tomorrow. I think it's going to be
really excited. We're going to be incorporating a Slido for interactive polling in the opening comments, and we're going to do that in the closing comments as well. And just really try to galvanize what were the key themes and major takeaways for the event, and what was that positive expectancy people had coming into the event?
Yeah.
What is it that they're looking for?
And the connections after.
Huge.
I think for me, it's what we do with it after. How do we work together to, you know, 1 + 1 = 3.
That whole idea of synergy.
Yeah. What do you do now?
So it's interesting. I've had a transition in recent months. I do independent consulting and contract work while I really figure out where can I do this work without the risk of burnout. That's one of the things that we've always been concerned about. How do we put ourselves in sustainable situations? And for the past 4 years, I was working for a top 25 insurance broker. But my workload continued to expand. My travel demands increased. And I found myself 3-4 days each week traveling on the road. And not enough downtime, not enough me time, not enough time for my 35-year marriage.
You should take care of that.
My wife and I are empty nesters. We have 5 kids who all boomeranged back at one point during the pandemic. And we're like, is this really what we thought our pre-retirement years would be? And so I'm really excited to have the opportunity to explore new pathways. I do a lot with workplace mental health.
Yes.
Substance misuse, suicide prevention, opioid risk reduction, and overdose prevention. And so it became too big to try to tackle all of those issues.
And you're doing it through an insurance broker.
I was.
You were. And now you're really doing consulting on your own.
I am. Because it gives me the opportunity to set limits and boundaries. This idea of overworking was something that happened many years ago. It became a secondary task. I helped launch the Mental Health and Suicide Prevention Initiative in the construction industry. It happened post 9/11.
Yeah.
Really took off after Hurricane Katrina. And then this work just continued to expand. And I was doing this in my part-time networking, collaborating, trying to build an army of helpers. And so I was very deliberate, but I had to do my day job. And then this became what I did early mornings or after hours and a lot of weekends. I had to write articles. I had to recruit people, build slide decks, share with people different pathways.
Wow, that is a pack. No wonder Eleanor fell in love with that, the passion.
It was incredible. And I'm grateful for every experience I had. But I had to really ask myself tough questions. Is this what I was called to? Or do I need to simplify this? And now that there are more helpers, I found that I didn't have to do everything. And so I'm really excited about picking my spots. And the areas that I feel have not been addressed are the precursors that lead to a lot of mental health in the workplace, the stigma around substance misuse, addiction, treatment, and recovery, and then overdose is huge. It was easier to get people to talk about suicide prevention than mental health. But you never could talk about addiction until the pandemic. And the pandemic gave us that opportunity because in that first year post-pandemic in the U.S., increase of 25% over, like, increased deaths from alcohol. And the overdose crisis.
I just can't imagine people sitting at home drinking, because what else you're going to – that's such a bad spiral.
Such a bad spiral. And that new – industry of day drinking increased. That became a job for many people, unfortunately. They were stressed. There was a lot of anxiety. It was something that they could do in the comfort of their homes. And for some individuals,
absolutely,
it became problematic. And overdoses doubled in the past five years, quadrupled in the last 10. Become the public health crisis. And it's hard to galvanize support, because people think it's individuals making bad decisions. But many times, addiction finds the person, not the person finding the addiction.
Yeah.
It's not just people making bad decisions. Sometimes it comes from prescriptions for on and off the job injuries, surgery,
definitely starts
or leftover pills. This idea
even of leftover pills.
Diversion. There's data that's crystal clear that makes this a challenge. I could share some of that data. I don't want to hijack your podcast, Ken.
Yeah, no, I think it's more I think what you said there that I really latch onto is, you didn't say the exact word, but it's that you said the precursor, and it's the underlying, it's those root causes.
It is.
And I think at the workplace, it is a source of stress. I mean, if you have a bad boss, if you have a tough, I mean, I would imagine the way you described your own work at the end, you had to leave for your own mental health in a way, right? You had to protect yourself. You had somewhere else to go. So you're pulled a little bit, but you know what I mean? If that's what it feels like when you look back.
We're seeing so many people describe this idea of burnout.
Yeah.
People who are feeling frustrated in their work, and yet they know that this is a calling. It's something they're good at. They've got this empathy. They have a gift to share with the world. But the pressures, the demands, the scope and nature of our work just proliferated is the only word I can use. It just rapidly expanded beyond the capability of us saying no fast enough. I knew by February that I was going to be in over my head this year. And I should have put the shovel down, because if you find yourself in a hole you can't get out of,
stop digging. This is some wisdom right here.
So it took me until May to take a vacation.
Just stop digging.
And the organization I was working with, they were grateful. They celebrated when I took that vacation. Because for me, I've always been Superman. And it's hard to admit that this became a source of weakness.
Nice.
What happened last year was we intended to move to the middle of the country. We put our house on the market, and then, as luck would have it, the Fed hiked interest rates the first day our home was going to be on the market. And that became an omen. We ended up not selling our home in Seattle and moving back to the Midwest. But what happened before we knew we weren't going to be moving, I let my calendar fill in, and I said yes to everything that would have been driving distance from where I thought I was going to be moving. And that became the problem. I'm living in Seattle, but I'm doing work in Iowa, Missouri, Kansas, Minnesota.
And there's no easy way to get to Iowa.
And so it's flying or Missouri. And then long driving and squeezing in sometimes 7-8 meetings in a week, being on the road 4 and 5 nights. I had 3 weeks last year where I was home for less than 24 hours.
And 3 weeks like that.
3 weeks like that.
Changing suitcase.
And then anticipating winter storms. I've got to get out ahead of the storm. So the organization that's expecting me to be their lead speaker on Monday morning doesn't have a no-show.
I'll be there. I'll leave Sunday morning.
You leave Saturday night.
Or even Saturday night. Yeah.
On one case. And what I'm saying, though, is we all need to evaluate our well-being. And the organization I was working with, together, we made the determination this really wasn't going to be sustainable, that I really had to pick a lane. And pick the lane is going to allow me to just pick those best spots. Where can I have the biggest impact? And where I personally feel that I'm being called and drawn toward is tackling the idea of substance misuse and its interface with addiction, treatment, and recovery, and then this idea of overdose prevention. I feel like I've been prepared to tackle this opioid crisis to help people in the workplace recognize that there are steps we can take in employee benefits and in workers' compensation.
Yeah, the crisis is real. I've interviewed on my other podcast, The Jar.
Yes.
I've interviewed, I don't know, a good half dozen moms and fathers who have lost their kids to drug overdose, fentanyl, heroin, opiates. It's just, it's such a hard conversation.
Tragic. And yet more preventable than...
This is the worst part, right?
It's the worst part. Two weeks ago, I was in Virginia, and I got to present with a mother who lost her oldest son to an overdose. Mm. And she is an amazing person. I'd like to introduce you to her.
Oh, yeah.
She reaches people in a different path. But she was a family licensed, a licensed professional counselor and a family marriage therapist. And what was powerful about her story, she started volunteering in the local county jail. And now she serves as the director of behavioral health for the whole sheriff's department outside of Richmond, Virginia. And talk about coming full circle. That's what gives me hope, is how people can take that grief and that sense of profound loss and turn it into something amazing. Transformative.
This is why I started the Jar Foundation.
I remember when you started.
On this show. And it's because I was so, I interviewed about 200 people in about 80 cities or 60 cities from Washington all the way to Atlanta. I took a break and I looked back and I just went, wow, like what happened? I just went through every story and just countless of mental health journeys and trauma and drugs, overdoses and people and just people losing family, friends, suicides, overdose, and just said, I got to do something. Like, I can't just sit here with all this and just go talk to people. I got to do something with the stories. And so started the foundation, hope to do something with that and raise some money to help people who are doing things locally, you know, where I meet them local in a place and help them if I can raise some money. And then, and to start this podcast, to meet people like you, to lift up stories so we can all kind of share what's going on in the I don't know where there's a resource. And so we've got this now with AI. So this, all the stories are now, or all the interviews are into an AI database, and we can search and start to match people now.
Yeah, I love
I've
what
just
you're
found
doing.
I can match people.
That matching is going to be so amazing.
Yeah.
That ability to just connect and then have people search out like-minded people.
And they're both working on something close, right? It's like they're in the same lane, or not the same lane, but they're parallel. And it's like, if you just kind of merged, you might really be even more powerful.
Yeah, I'm very excited about the potential of artificial intelligence, this idea around AI. People are talking about it in the workplace, and you have to think about this as AI as the future of people. This is the big difference. It's going to have a big impact, but we need to manage the change process to take away the stress and the pressure of a new technology that people have been fearful of.
But yeah, it's
the benefits of AI are going to be amazing.
It's a great tech, and you know, we're going to be fine on the other side of it. Yeah, I'm working with a company called Moonnox, and I take the transcripts and upload them to a proprietary database. It's for only mental health today. and all of the data sits in there, the audio and the video.
Wow.
And so you could type in, who are two people working on music and mental health, or give me all the music and mental health conversations. And we'll just go through there and pull out timestamp, who's talking, give you little frames. It's going to be really interesting, because then I can start to, like I said, once I get all of them in there, I can start to connect people. What do you hope? What do you think tomorrow, at the end of tomorrow, what are you closing out with? What's the message tomorrow at 5 p.m. or when we wrap up? What do you think is going to be that?
I think people are going to see that they've had an opportunity to participate in a very intimate, very exciting, very dynamic session that's very broad, but very specific. I think people are going to say that they are wowed. I think they're going to feel impressed. I think they're going to feel energized. I think they're going to feel focused on really tackling the current themes that are going to drive workplace mental health to the next level. So I'm excited. I think it's going to be buoyant. I think it's going to be very optimistic. I think there's going to be a lot of positive energy. And I think what I hope we figure out is, how do we keep this buzz going after tomorrow?
This is my biggest thing, is the after. I've been, one of the conversations, I've had a lot of conversations, which is really, really interesting to me, but I've had a lot of conversations with people around psychedelics. I didn't have this on my bingo card last year that I would be, entertaining going to November, going to Miami to talk to people. It's a bit of a, it's a bit woo-woo-ish. But one of the things that's come out of that that's interesting to me is thematically is that after the session, so there's all this if you're intentional and going in and everything, but what matters the most is what you do with that session. And so just like tomorrow is powerful, but it's the work after.
Yeah, we hope everyone is going to identify key themes, key takeaways, things that they can take back, put into practice in their organization. We have a great diversity of attendees, but in the workplace, it's about implementation. It's about execution. And then it's the measurement of steps to evaluate, did it have the intended impact that it should have?
Yep.
You mentioned that employee benefit space. This is one of those areas that more and more employers are looking for the ROI, or they're looking for the practicality of implementing
ROI solutions. ROI is huge.
It's huge.
We're two insurance guys. I'm a root cause person. I believe in, the data's got to be around somewhere. The entire medical industry, not the entire, but a good chunk of the medical industry is basically built around fixing the manifestation of mental health issues, heart attack, stroke, everything stress related is a mental health issue. So if you're an employer, if you want to get your ROI, look at your medical costs. We will directly impact your medical costs dramatically. Your absenteeism. I mean, I'm sure you could go on this. I could go crazy on this topic.
You look at the symptoms, the clues.
Yeah.
Where are we struggling? So years ago, my pathway to workplace mental health as a non-clinician was as a safety professional and a risk manager.
Okay.
And it was
pretty dry.
Human capital risk management.
That's pretty dry.
And I partnered with an organization called the Construction Financial Management Association. Yes. And
even I know that's super dry.
Dynamic their thoughts around human capital risk management, because they recognized everything I said, they gravitated toward. So the first topic I did was called safety in the bottom line. How do I teach them techniques that impacts their bottom line? So what you had to do is identify what were the impacts on their profitability. So I looked at a simple model, and the simple model in those days was PQRS.
Okay.
Productivity, quality, risk, and safety. Those impact profitability. But we've learned those human capital risks were at the cause of every organizational challenge. So this became a cultural imperative. How do you build this into a caring culture that had empathy? And if you could build empathy, people knew they were cared for, they would take steps when an organization would lean in and talk about workplace mental health. Sadly, it took almost a generation for us to move that needle. But once we did, it became like dominoes. So this idea of human capital risk management, on the benefit side, it took a long time for people to talk about comorbidities.
Yes. Yeah.
Those chronic health conditions that co-occur with substance misuse or mental health. And even today, if you ask people, how are you measuring workplace mental health? You want an ROI? What's it costing you? They'll give you this blank stare. So what I look for will be absenteeism, tardiness.
Yes.
Then presenteeism, when people are at work but not fully engaged. And there's some great data from Virgin Health that would show average absenteeism might average 4 to 5 days per year, but presenteeism up to 40 to 50 days per year.
Oh, it's got to be
of lost productivity.
For sure, a couple of months a year, you're not present.
Yes, where a person is not able to focus, they're distracted. Yeah. And that's why this whole person method of well-being is gaining popularity. The whole, person comes to work.
What is that?
So this idea of well-being, we can't compartmentalize and have people segregate, keep your personal issues at home like the old days.
Right, yeah.
That whole person comes to work and we bring baggage with us. And so years ago, I did a training class and I made these little baggage claim checks. Everybody who came in had to give me a destination where they wanted their new bag to go. And so I had these three little digit codes that people would take.
Okay.
And some were cute, like NRG for energy.
Okay.
Some were HPE was the destination airline code for hope. Sometimes people just needed to know that they could get through. They needed light in their darkness. So LGH was a symbol, or LGT, I think, is what we did. Just to give people the sense that you have to check your baggage to get to a new destination. And that's how we were talking about your role as a supervisor or as a leader, is to build a culture that lets people express what's concerning them. Sadly, it still took another 10 years to truly get people to talk about issues. And then we had to go to suicide prevention before you could do mental health, because that became a five-alarm fire. In our country, suicides had increased 35% from 1999 to 2000.
It's just that number
In 18, and now we're at 50,000. But overdose deaths were at 112,000 in the last reporting period. So clearly we need to double down, triple down our efforts around preventive workplace mental health.
And
break down the barriers and get access to care.
Yes. In workplace, for me, this is, we cannot hire enough therapists. We can't build the infrastructure. You can't build the legislation that needs to be passed in order to address the crisis, because it's a multiple thing on the individual. At the individual level, this is impossible to address. When we can't. Obviously, we tried. It's got to be through the work. I mean, you have to go through the workplace. I mean, it's not the only place, but the workplace is many people to one location. You can deliver a lot.
You probably saw me light up. I wanted to jump out of the chair, give you a big high five. The workplace became the next frontier of mental health.
Yes.
And then suicide prevention, because in the workplace, because of benefits and employee assistance programs, we could build a caring culture.
Oh, man.
But with that caring culture, that became the safety net for people to not suffer in silence or suffer alone. So what was interesting, once we did mental health as that next frontier, we experienced some resistance from the traditional clinical side, that it's not going to be the same. Nope, but it's going to be different. And it became effective because peer-to-peer support is the secret sauce. It's the opportunity to let people know, I understand you, I see you. And I hear you. I feel you. I know what your pain is. I've been through it myself.
Yeah, yeah.
So when you
the peer support side at work,
huge. It's hard to get rolled out, but every place I've seen it, and there's so many peer models. I saw it post 9/11.
Okay.
Canadian public safety agencies were doing peer to peer support. They were a little farther ahead on chaplains as well. In the U.S., we had EAPs and officer assistance programs. But when we started learning what they were doing, that was powerful. And you've seen peer-to-peer support in 12-step and other recovery programs. Yeah. You've seen peer support in the homeless community and reacclimating people, yeah. Job coaches for developmentally disabled individuals. It became part of inclusion and it's part of belonging. And yeah. when you can build inclusion and belonging, then you can tackle things like the diversity and the equity.
Yeah. And that's one of the ways we can address a crisis. I think the peer, because the bar is way lower than a therapist or anything else. And it's a lived experience. So you connect quite powerfully. I just applied. So I just,
awesome.
I started mine for Nevada, for the state of Nevada. I just started going through my certification. Very excited. I'm kind of giddy. I won't use it because I don't think I'll use it, but I will learn from it.
You'll learn the techniques.
I'll be a better person.
You'll be a better person.
I'll be a better person.
And that's one thing I know about you. What's interesting is when you think about these challenges, like in the US, people think, why don't people just call the doctors? Well, there's barriers to care. And what you described about not enough therapists, I mean, 65% of yeah. counties in the US don't have enough therapists. And if you're looking as a parent to find a pediatrician who specializes in adolescent mental health, waiting lists in many places, parents have been sharing 6, 9, 12 months. What's beautiful about the EAPs, they've started to shift their model to in-the-moment counseling. So they've often been able to provide help. And then we've got 988, the new three-digit.
Yeah, the 988 is fantastic.
It's made headway. We've made progress. We're helping more people. We've reduced total response time, especially on the chats, but even on the phone calls. But the more that gets used, the more the case is going to be made to continue the investment in building up the infrastructure. And when we can get to mobile response teams, 988, that's a non-law enforcement response, but a true behavioral health approach. It will be a different look for people in disadvantaged, underrepresented communities.
Yeah, I interviewed one of my guests with the Jar Show. This is what she did.
Powerful.
I was like, how do you do that? She's like, the phone rings and it's somebody that wants to kill themselves and I'm in a car. 30 seconds later, I'm in my car going out there on emergency.
That mobile response.
And I'm not sure if I can even swear on my own podcast, but she's bad in a good way.
I knew what you wanted to say.
to sit across from somebody that's does this. Committed themselves to basically dropping whatever they're doing and going to save a life.
It's powerful. Imagine
her PTSD.
Yes.
I mean, the demons that she gets to visit and then have to go lay down 30 minutes later. The person goes in the ambulance, drives away, and then there you are, jacked up.
It's powerful when caregivers provide care to one another.
Yes.
So even when I was going through, what I was feeling was this untenable. I had people checking in with me. I'm like, I'm fine. I will be fine. I'll get there. I just have to get through the end of the year. Yeah. And it's all good.
And look at you now.
But I appreciated people reaching out. Yeah. That's what this starts with. Just the simple awareness that I, as a person, can help another person through a time of crisis. And it's powerful when we equip people in the workplaces.
I love it. That's
like role playing, teaching people how to role play these conversations. People say, how did you get boomers in construction companies to talk about mental health? That was like the impossible. They all work hard to support their families. And so we know that.
Yeah.
So if you teach them how to take care of their families, they're going to lean in and learn from you. They're going to apply that lesson. And when you've taught them that, they'll take care of that at home. They'll help others in the workplace. And it becomes a different workplace with empowered mental health advocates in the workplace.
And people know who they are and they're like little heroes.
They are. Some companies,
right? Yeah,
they're wearing like a badge of honor on a hard hat. Or I've seen patches. More companies are bringing chaplains on site to have relationships with employees, but some are having peer specialists who have gone through specialized training and are bringing those tools to the workplace. And people are stepping up and volunteering.
You met Marcel, my friend Marcel from Tomorrow Needs You.
What a soul. I was so blown away.
what he's done.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing what he's done with the gift that he was given in a way.
He wears it on his sleeve and on his chest, on his t-shirt, on his hat. And then he gives you this little calling card.
Yeah.
Like the power of those wallet cards, when someone hands you something, you're compelled to read it.
Yeah.
And I just loved his spirit. I loved
he's got it.
His story, sad, but impactful. And what he's done to outgrow that grief and to just plant seeds of hope. Every conversation he's having.
Imagine him in a workplace.
A beautiful soul.
Because he's as blue as it gets, right? He's an electrician. He's like, I've never been an officer or anything. I'm not an officer and a gentleman. I am an electrician grunt. I am in there pulling wires, stripping wires. Did that for how many years in the union?
Yeah, he's going to meet someone here that I invited to attend tomorrow. And he'd already made a connection just using the app. And I was like, dang.
I was telling him on the way over, she's an oddity. What is she doing here? Right. It's very corporate, but she's a union. I'm like, how did she get there? Now I know it didn't make sense to me. Now it does.
But that's what we do. We build these connectivities. It's almost like synapses in a brain. Nerve endings, they're like dendrites. They're just sticking out and you've got to find ways to cross connect. And we learn from one another. Then we cross pollinate. And then we can really impact populations with new ideas. I can't wait to hear Marcel when he talks to her.
Oh, it's going to...
They're going to explode.
It's so good. He's in such a great place. Cal, how do people find you? And maybe I could ask anything else you want to share. You want to share with the audience, talk about tomorrow, or anything else you want to share. And then let people know how to find you.
Yeah. For anyone who is hurting, anyone who's feeling broken or alone, I just want to let you know, help is available. And so I try to shine light and associate with people who shine light into that darkness to give people hope, to break down stigma. And so the three words I use are hope, help, and recovery. So if we can shine light, give someone hope, maybe they'll seek help. If they seek help, recovery is possible. What Marcel and I talked about too often, the aftermath of unresolved mental health, stress, anxiety, pressures, self-doubt, nagging, inadequacy leads people to make permanent decisions out of temporary situations. So that's why I want to share, if you are feeling alone, isolated, like no one sees you, no one cares, there are people who care.
They do care.
Please call 988. It is a beautiful service. The volunteers there are incredible. They're going to offer you help. They're going to give you that hope. They'll point you in the right direction. If you just can't muster up the strength to make that call, call Crisis Text Line.
Okay.
So it's a text. You type or text help to 741-741.
Oh, I didn't know this was a number.
Yes, so 741-741. And many people who don't like to make phone calls, the younger generation, I find 35, now almost 40 and under, are more open to having a text conversation. Again, you've got trained volunteers. And those are the things on wallet cards that I've been sharing in the workplace since 2011.
Okay.
Because I want people to know they're not alone. And if you help a person in that point of crisis, guaranteed, they're going to have empathy to help someone else. So now we're heightened awareness leads more people into getting helped. So that's powerful. And that was really important for me to say, because you and I could go down 25 different paths. We could go in and out of 15 rabbit holes, right?
Yes.
And it would be fun. And I would love that. But today, I wanted that message to be kind of that final thought. The best way to reach me is on LinkedIn.
Okay.
Cal, CalBeyer, Beyer, or cal.beyer@gmail.com.
Okay.
And there's a lot of momentum in this workplace mental health. If you're still afraid to lean in, please do. Meet us there.
Yeah.
Reach out. If you are afraid to have these conversations in your workplace, Ken and myself know we can point you to many different people of many different backgrounds who can help you address this in your workplace. This is the safety net your employees and their family members need. Workplace mental health saves lives.
Agree. Agree. And as an employer, you're in a powerful position to bring that to many, many people with one easy decision. I mean, it's just, it's criminal not to do it.
It's powerful.
Yeah.
It really is.
It's, I spent a lot of time in workplace. My whole first part of my insurance career was, I spent a lot of time with HR, a lot of time around employees.
Me too.
Every kind of business you can imagine. And I love it. I love the workplace and I love the people and the managers and just the way we can, it's the point. It's the pointy end of the stick for me.
People are people. Regardless of what industry, they have the same basic human needs.
Yes. Yeah.
And what we can do in the workplace is build that safety net, but we can give them a shield so they can fight those fights and not feel like they're alone. They've got the support of their employer. They've got the support of their peers and colleagues in the workplace.
Knowing you have a job is part of this, right? You know, you don't want to, that's part of the mental health questions at work. You don't want to talk about it because you don't, you know, you want to hold on to that and to know your employer's got your back.
Yeah. And we have to teach employers, how do you teach to their employees that they are being sincere and being authentic? And that's what I love about whole person well-being model. It truly is an authentic understanding of the human condition. And you look at the human capital risk management, the costs and consequences and the causes, but bringing them solutions, that's coming through the programs that we're going to talk about tomorrow at Employer Mental Health Summit.
Yeah, I love it.
Powerful.
Cal, thanks so much for being a guest.
Great to see you in person.
Yeah,
it's really fun to finally meet you after 3 years.
Yeah, it is strange that we would meet here. Like I didn't have that on my bingo card either.
It wasn't on my bingo card, but I wasn't surprised that you found a way to be here. And so I called Eleanor and she said, hey, someone wants to meet you. And I was like, oh my gosh, I know Ken Stearns.
Well, I gave Eleanor a crazy idea. I said, hey, I want to come and do my show live from here. And she's a visionary. She's, you know, it's like, oh, okay, it sounds good. Come on over.
What I love about her, she's open to every conversation.
This is it, right?
Yes.
Open. So big shout out, Eleanor. Thanks. You're an excellent representation of the company. So thanks, everybody, for listening to this kind of ad hoc episode of Mental Health Today. We'll be here tomorrow with who knows? We'll have at least, I imagine, a couple guests. We'll have 2, 3, 4 guests come through and have some great conversations. And we'll keep you posted on what happens and what the outcomes are. Maybe I'll do a little wrap-up show on
a post show.
Maybe we'll do a post show tomorrow. On Wednesday morning. Or even maybe Wednesday morning, we'll come in here before the other one starts or something. We'll find something.
Perfect. Sounds great, Ken. Thanks so much.
Thanks again, everybody. And talk to you very soon.